Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning health briefing. Dr. Thomas Moran with us today, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital, Northwestern Medicine. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk first about what may be rendering Tamiflu less effective, this dual mutant seasonal flu virus. What do we know about this?
Good morning, Bob. Yes, there has been a couple cases of this dual mutant strain of H1N1 flu that was reported over the fall winter last year, and it's shown a little bit to be not responding as much to our antiviral Tamiflu. But overall, when we look at this, there are other antivirals that we could use. There's baloxavir that is also sensitive to this, but really we have to wait to the next flu season that comes up to see what happens with these genetic mutations, because they always change a little bit as it goes through, and they're still responsive, just not as responsive to the antivirals.
When is the best time to get a flu shot?
Flu shot is usually in the October-November time range, right before flu season kicks in.
All right, we won't panic about this dual mutant just yet. There are some interesting numbers out now about type 1 diabetes. People are living longer with this, aren't they?
Yeah, type 1 diabetes, you know, it's a childhood autoimmune disease that affects our ability to regulate insulin. And with it, we have had advances that have come through in monitoring and control. And the more that you are able to keep your sugar in check, the better you're able to withstand the effects of diabetes. And so over the years, like if you take 1990 time range, there was about 1.3 million people that lived to the age of 65 with type 2 diabetes. Since then, by 2019, we've almost more than doubled that to 3.7 million people living past the age of 65 with type 1 diabetes. And the death rate overall for that age group with type 1 diabetes has decreased also.
Remind us again the difference between type 1 and type 2.
Type 1 is developed as a child, usually before a teenager, where you have a defect in the cells that produce insulin. And type 2 diabetes is more of adult onset diabetes that comes from a really overuse of the production of insulin and more of a kind of environmental effects of diet, lack of exercise as we go forward in our age.
So, I mean, I think the old axiom about sugar and you're eating too much candy, so you're going to get diabetes. There is some truth to that, isn't there?
Well, I think that when you look at the increased amount of candy products that we have, there's sugar in almost everything that we eat. Really try not to add additional sugars to your diet. Limiting the amount of sweets that you do eat really is beneficial to your overall health.
Hey, on that subject, it seems like every week there's a story about chocolate and dark chocolate, and chocolate is healthy, it's not healthy. But there is some research now that was done fairly recently, and the findings, I mean, for people like me, addicted to sugar, were very, very good. Higher chocolate intake may be associated with a lower risk of heart problems. What's the takeaway from this latest research?
So with chocolate, the darker the better. Really, dark chocolate, usually more than 70% cocoa that is in the chocolate, means less sugar overall. And with that, you get the benefits of the cocoa that's in there. So chocolate comes from a bean. That bean has flavonoids in it. Those flavonoids help decrease inflammation. They're antioxidants. They overall decrease your level of inflammation in your body, could lower your blood pressure. They also taste really good. If you like something that's sweet, the issue turns into milk chocolate sweeter than dark chocolate. Chocolate has much more beneficial health benefits to it overall. It has a little bit more of a bitter taste, but if you could balance that with a little bit of fruit added to the chocolate or sometimes a little bit of salt, it balances the flavor out, and you get all the benefits of the cocoa that comes with it into dark chocolate, and you still get a treat as you kind of go through your day.
But you are getting fat and sugar and calories, aren't you?
Yeah, it's higher in calories overall, but the benefit, if you're going to have something that's sweet and it's not going to be berries or fruit, dark chocolate's the way to go.
Interesting. I was reading about this, and you feel good when you're eating sweets, but there is some science behind it, because your serotonin levels will actually get triggered by dark chocolate, or I guess any chocolate, right?
Yeah, it's one of those kind of candies when you put it in the candy range, but that is good for you. It has antioxidants that help our body. It helps decrease inflammation, and it does increase our serotonin. That's why you feel good, like you said, after having chocolate.
Yeah.
But again, you have to moderate yourself a little bit where you're not having multiple pieces of chocolate. Reward yourself at the end of the day or after dinner with a small 1 ounce, piece of chocolate. Make it dark, and you actually benefit yourself overall.
Yeah.
Plus, you feel good.
You keep that 1 ounce in mind, about the size of a dental floss case. We'll continue here with Dr. Thomas Moran, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. After a break, we will get some more information that I think is news you can use. Northwestern's Dr. Thomas Moran, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital, talking about some new studies and new research. And let's talk about what researchers discovered about people who drink when they're on the airplane, and many people feel that helps them sleep. It may not be the case, and this is something to remember as you head out on summer vacation this year. What did this new study tell us, Doc?
Well, they looked at it. If you think of an airplane, it's pressurized to about 8,000 feet. So the oxygen content of that plane is a little bit lower. Mix in alcohol, which is a sedative, and you have a chance of decreasing your overall functional capacity to breathe. Hmm. So people drink it because they think it's like, oh, what, I'm a little anxious, I'm going to get on the plane, this will help me sleep. It might make you feel sleepy, but usually what happens is it depresses your overall ability to oxygenate well. The studies have shown that those individuals who had a couple drinks and then slept, their oxygen saturations dropped. You add in that it's already lower oxygen availability on the airplane, and you could set yourself up for some strain on your heart and lungs, and you can increase some risk of cardiovascular events on a plane. Those people with sleep apnea already that are mixing alcohol with the high altitudes could really drop their saturations or their oxygen in their blood down to levels that could trigger irregular heartbeats that could cause events to happen on the plane.
So bottom line, you want a good nap on the plane, probably best to stay away from alcohol, huh?
It's probably best to stay away from it. Maybe, eat well beforehand, try and stay away from the salty foods, hydrate really well, makes a big difference. And try and relax your eyes on the planes, maybe put some noise-canceling headphones on, and just sit back and relax.
There's a new review of, I think it was something like 70 or 80 studies regarding the withdrawal risk of quitting antidepressants. What's your takeaway from this study?
So I think overall, when we look at antidepressants, there are medications that people go on to help with their mental health from anxiety, depression. And most of them are on it for a period of months to years. And there are times when they improve and don't need the medications anymore. Mm-hmm. What was happening was sometimes that people suddenly stopped the medications and went through some symptoms of withdrawal, either increased anxiety, dizziness, headache, irritability, or insomnia. And what the studies have found is there's different medications that we utilize for mental health. Some have more significant withdrawal experience for patients. But what they found is if we taper the doses a little bit instead of abruptly withdraw them, we usually get through this period of time, which probably lasts about 2 weeks overall until you get into a steady state and can maintain yourself. Knowing full well that sometimes patients can relapse a little bit and have to restart the medications. But really, you can coordinate this with your doctor and go through a more of an organized approach to stopping the medication instead of abrupt withdrawal of it.
So I guess the message here is, if you're on antidepressants and you're about to get off of it, or you want to get off, best to consult your physician, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a medication that you want to just stop by yourself because you feel better. It's really management of your condition overall, and then what's the pace that you go about backing off on it till you're off it.
And we've been talking about Alzheimer's this month because this is Brain Awareness Month. And looking at the list of things we should be thinking about here, one of them really caught my eye, and the headline is Fuel Up Right. And the research on diet and cognitive function is limited, but it does appear certain diets can help our brain. Is that right?
Yeah, overall, I think it, just like we talked about earlier with sugar, the better balanced, healthy diet with more fruits and vegetables, the decrease your propensity to have a decline cognitively when you look at it. I mean, right now, I mean, think of your brain as just a, you want to exercise it, right? So exercise increases oxygen to your brain. You also want to train it. There's no point in time where you stop learning. So you want to stress your brain a little bit by learning new things, maybe a language, maybe an exercise, maybe an instrument. Cut out smoking. You want to eat well, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. Protect your head from injury. And the other thing is remain social with other individuals so you have a good social network to keep you active and engaged. And that, in general, decreases your likelihood for cognitive decline as we age.
All right. That and 1 ounce of dark chocolate. I got it.
It's always good.
Dr. Thomas Moran, Northwestern Medicine. Thank you, doctor. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Bob. Have a great day.
You too. News on the Hour is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.